Follow me and ponder the question. What if?
Welcome, Swamp Kittens, to a new edition of I Want My MCU TV. I'm your hostess, Lisa Schmeiser, and with me tonight are Don Melton.
Yeah.
And Kelly Gamont.
Release the foam.
We are here to talk about what is arguably the silliest entrant in Marvel's What If series. What if Thor had been raised?
No, there's no argument. There's no argument. It's just the
silliest. If the word is silly, the answer is yes.
We still have two more episodes left, and I live in hope. But so far, for the seven that have aired, this one is the most gleefully ridiculous. So we're here to give it the usual tripartite treatment. For those of you who are new to the podcast, and for those of you who are regular listeners, you will know that our podcast typically comprises three sections. And while our dream is to have them as clearly and evenly divided as the layers in a 1960s era Jell-O salad, sometimes they get mixed together, like the layers in the 1990s era Jell-O shots that I'm more familiar with. So
yes, this is my Jell-O medium as well.
Yes. That really goes with the party theme of this episode.
It does, doesn't it? I love
it. Maybe if you all ask really nicely, I will give you my recipe for Halloween themed Jell-O shots.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. I think what we could do is we could have a brief cocktails round where we talk about the most extravagantly stupid libations we've partaken of at parties as well.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, before we say incriminating things on a podcast, let's review the three segments that we strive to include every week. The first one, in lieu of a recap, is the reset, where we discuss what has changed in this particular universe that has brought us to this particular narrative. Then we have our reaction segment, where we basically unpack what we saw, we squeal about what we liked, we complain about what we didn't, we spin off into flights of fancy that can cover anything from Disney's corporate strategy to the costuming choices of our entirely made-up people. And then our final segment is always, Really? Whereupon Kelly and I pelt our professor Don Melton with all sorts of questions about Marvel Comics lore and how it fits into this particular episode. All right. We've got our ground rules. We've got good vibes only. Let's get started on the remix portion. And basically, the Watcher asked the question, or rather, the Watcher frames the question for this week's episode as, what if Thor were an only child? And to hear him tell it, the pivotal moment in this timeline is when Odin decides not to abscond with like a war trophy baby, raise it as his own and not tell it it's been adopted, thus kickstarting like an entire movie arc about like family crises, yes! But instead hands the baby back to the dude he's just vanquished in battle. Somehow this like forges some sort of divine daddy playgroup thing. And
excuse me, sir, is this your baby?
Well, yes, thank you. I was wondering where I had mislaid that in the melee. Anyway, Thor grows up as a presumed only child. There's no mention whatsoever of Hela at all in this. And the argument is that since Thor grows up as a much loved and indulged only child who never had a brother to, you know, turn himself into a snake and bite him at age 8 or anything like that.
Or turn him into a frog.
Yes. He grew up as an oblivious, partying, handsome bohunk who just wants to have a good time and is generally oblivious to consequences. And he doesn't see any reason why he can't just party his way across the galaxy. And if a dying star happens to die, well, you know, it was going away anyway. So why not give it something to remember before it goes? So that's
just
your remix.
Helped it along.
Yeah. All right. I know in past podcasts, we have talked about how the Watcher's framing of the what if is different than what we really perceive the pivotal what if event to be. But I see nothing wrong with it this time. How about you guys?
Gosh, I do.
Yeah? Oh, I want to hear. Yes.
Spoiler horn. For people who haven't watched the episode, I feel like sort of obligated to do that. But we see at the very, very end of the episode, the unveiling after the Watcher's like, oops, my bad. We get a nice wide shot of Ultron, whose chest plate is clad in Infinity Stones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like maybe the thing that made that happen is the bigger what if.
I've got an explanation for that if you want to go into it right now, because I suspect what the thing is. So it's clear that in this universe, in this multiverse where, you know, Thor's
an only
child. Yeah.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be an Ultron anyway, because there certainly okay, wouldn't
is
be
that
a Vision
who that was? Because it, yeah, was... That,
it okay. was, it was, Ultron, and it was the Vision inside there, the body of Paul Bettany. And you can see he has the Mind Stone in his head and in his forehead, and the other stones arrayed out there. And notice which stone is prominently portrayed there, lower down. That's the Time Stone. Mm. So what we're seeing here, and why the Watcher is upset or surprised, and possibly this is the event that mm-hmm. finally gets the Watcher off his fat baby ass and intervenes, is because mm-hmm. there wouldn't have been an Ultron in this world, because Tony Stark wouldn't have had the experience of New York, Loki coming down
yeah.
and invading and everything right. else. So none of that happened, right? No. So why would Tony Stark, as Iron Man, along with Bruce Banner as the Hulk, create the Ultron project? No need for it.
Okay, right? So I'm calling it, we're moving into reaction now, because we're yeah. parsing this out.
Yeah,
but we've had the remix. We did it.
How, yeah. yeah, yeah, why we don't do this. So it's obvious that this guy's going lateral along the timelines, just like the TVA, just like Kang, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, ho.
So well, yeah, this is a
he's
big
bobbing
deal.
Back, because like the presence of that Ultron with the Vision's body is a clear call out to the Avengers Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. And the what if in that universe is, what if they're caught? What if Ultron's cockamamie plan actually worked, and Wanda and Pietro are like, cool, have fun with that, and you know, let it go on. And he did that and promptly went out and got a bunch of stones and then created an army of clones and said, okay, I have no more worlds left to conquer, or do I? And made it to-do list. And so this is how he ends up on, like, this is me wildly guessing, he's like, I have to go back and hit a world before the Avengers are assembled on it. That's clearly the best way to conquer it. And so that's why he bops back to what is the beginning of the MCU, more or less, where, you know, Thor is okay. in New Mexico, because he's actually asking Jen on a date. And okay. Hawkeye was nowhere to be found in this universe.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which suggests that S.H.I.E.L.D. is different in some level, and Tony Stark may well be trapped in a cave still, we don't know, and Captain America may still be under ice, and so it's easy pickings for Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because if Fury is out getting bopped by Taika Waititi's character
Korg, yes,
Korg,
yeah, Korg. Mm-hmm. that some of those things are not coming together. So the thing is how many of these different universes is Ultron going to visit?
Yeah.
But my theory to answer that question is, it doesn't really matter, because this series so far, if it's shown us nothing, it's that none of these episodes matter.
Mm.
You know, just and doesn't matter.
That's true. But one thing that I did like about this episode is that it didn't feel like it did, which sounds weird, but this week was much more the show I signed up for. Not
it's much
because
more
it was,
like the first episode, right?
Yeah, yeah, not because it was silly necessarily, not because I got to listen to Tom Hiddleston and go, brothers forever, but
another
because
the mother,
because it was an interesting twist in the story that we already know, which is fun. I like that. And the acting in it was great. I really enjoyed most of it. And Also, just that it didn't feel like, I mean, it didn't end on a downer, which was also a plus, but it also like gave me something interesting to consider, like how much that relationship affected both of them, both Thor and Loki, and what the ripples of that relationship were like. And that's part of what I thought was so interesting about it. So to me, the part of this that was the part of What If that I signed up for was it's not necessarily something that has a bunch of consequences to it, but it's a fun thing to get to see. And like, let's do this little thought exercise and kind of see what happens. And here you go. And hey, look, it's Rocket Raccoon in a sink. Hey, I know him. Well, if it isn't Hello, Mrs. Rabbit. The Duck, you know? Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I love that Thor misidentifies Rocket species across the multiverse. Like,
he has no idea what Rocket is, no matter when they are.
It's always a rabbit. I love
delightful.
That.
Well, he was a trash panda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second, I adore that Darcy in some universe is married to Howard the Duck.
Mrs. the Duck.
I think that's deeply hilarious. And
I am delighted that they got Seth Green back to voice Howard the Duck too.
The only person more delighted is Seth Green. I'm here to tell you.
They got a murderer's row of voice talent for this. So
I got to tell you, it probably, they had to write the episode like this to probably get Chris Hemsworth in, because the man just loves Looney.
He's very funny and hilarious and a complete lunatic.
Hiddleston totally enjoyed this because you could tell from his performance.
The two of them and their whole like their whole vibe this entire episode was like, oh, you think you're a goofball? Hold my beer.
So the only unfortunate thing about Loki and his frost giant pals,
Ice Bros. We call them
the Ice Bros. The only unfortunate thing about the Ice Bros is I kept thinking of Avatar.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And like that kind of ruined it for me a little bit. Just a little. But you know, otherwise, like the vocal performance was great, especially as like I said, you were my brother from another mother. That's your mother.
Yeah, I'm out, dude. Yeah.
Like it was so teen boy gets busted in a party. And I just loved how dumb and
it was
young
great.
and feckless it was. Oh, it was so great. So
by the way, point of parliamentary procedure, Loki is portrayed as a giant.
Yes.
Yes. Here,
and he was not a giant.
He was like runty baby. That's why they left him out in the cold, right?
Bingo. So
maybe the what if is what if Loki was normal sized.
Exactly. And that's why Odin didn't want him. Yeah. So I think that's the only thing because the whole story of Loki is the reason why he was in myth and in certain parts of the comics where he was a runt. So the thing with Ultron at the end, that is the only thing I didn't see coming, because as soon as the episode started and I saw, you know, the sneer across cartoon Chris Hemsworth's face, I went, okay, Thor goes to Midgard, hijinks ensue. Drunk Thor goes to Midgard, hijinks ensue. And so I knew exactly what was going to happen the entire time. And I knew because they flashed the credits for Tom Hiddleston being in it. And it's like, well, you're gonna have Lizard Loki in there. I didn't know he was going to be giant Lizard Loki, but the one thing I didn't know whether they were going to be bros or they were going to be enemies, but the bros thing was much more likely, I thought. I also didn't see Captain Marvel, but that totally made sense and was hysterical, and I was upset that the real Captain Marvel didn't get to do the voice acting.
Yeah, Brie Larson wasn't there for it. Like, Larson, what was up with that?
Well, you know, part of this is schedules. This is other things.
But I also didn't like her take. I can't remember the name of the actress that got to do
Alexandra Daniels did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was kind of disappointed because part of what I really like about Captain Marvel is Brie Larson, and And I was sort of disappointed that I wasn't able to get more of that where she goes toe to toe with Thor, because we got that in the movies. You know, I like her, you know, when she just doesn't flinch when he flings the hammer right by her head. You know, I like her. I was sort of bummed that we didn't get at least the same sort. It didn't feel like the same character, I guess. Like, I know it wasn't going to sound the same, but like, I felt like Black Widow was still Black Widow, even though it wasn't Scarlett Johansson's voice. And when we got some of the other ones that were not voiced by the original actors, like, mm-hmm. it still sort of felt like it was the same character. And this one didn't to me somehow. So that was kind of not fun. But that was like my only real nitpick in the episode, was that that character wasn't quite what I had hoped, you know, we would get out of Captain Marvel when we got Captain Marvel. So,
well, also Josette Eales is Frigga instead of Renee Russo.
Yeah.
Not quite on, but not bad. I remember Beth Hoyt as Pepper Potts was actually very, very,
very
good.
Very good.
Yeah.
In the last episode. And the nice thing was, and it's pretty easy because he does a lot of voice acting, I thought it was great. They got Clancy Brown back as Surtur.
Yes. Oh, that was great.
He was delightful. Yes.
And,
he was a lot of fun.
And Taika Waititi back as Korg. And Korg. Jeff Goldblum as the Goldblum. Grand Master.
They got Rachel House back to do like one line too. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I wish they had gotten, why can't I think of his name all of a sudden, Selvig.
Skarsgård.
Our Skarsgård. Yeah.
It's a Skarsgård. There's like a bunch of them working at this point.
There's a stack.
It's the dad. It's the dad. Skarsgård.
Stellan. Yes.
Stellan?
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And yes. Because so, Bill is the creepy clown. And then there's the one who was naked on HBO a lot, whose name I'm blanking on. And Stellan is the one who plays Selvig. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And yes. So, sexy vampire. I can't remember his name either. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Oh,
you
people. Anyway, and they got Colby Smulders back as Maria Hill.
Yes.
And the great thing was they got Frank Grillo back. And
his reading of we never get to use the nukes was just. This episode was so funny. Like, it was just really lighthearted and ridiculous. And the fact that you have a fragillion different alien civilizations touching down in Vegas and partying and the city was not, you know, surrounded by the National Guard. And then the party goes global. And again, people are just Instagramming it and being really cool. That I was like, this is a pretty chill universe. I like this universe. And I like that it's funny and ridiculous and that they knocked over Stonehenge in a huge battle. Mm-hmm. And it was just so gleefully adolescent, like not mean-spirited adolescent, but like adolescent when you're like, oh, it would really be a lot of fun to see what happens if I attach a string of firecrackers to a G.I. Joe doll, like that kind of adolescent.
It was just goofy. And it was funny. And it was fun too. Yeah. Like, because we also got a bunch of little, like smaller things, like, you know, like the party. And then, you know, we hear about the beer because the beer, like it, you can never drink it all. It refills. It's something called magic, you know, and
the matching tattoo. Like, there were just all these dumb little details. It was a 1980s, comedy film. I loved it. I loved that dumb sensibility. And I love that they have finally figured out what to do with Chris Hemsworth's Thor, which is like, just lean into his comedy instincts and let him go. Because like, God bless him for trying and doing what they asked him to do in like the first three movies, the first four movies he made as Thor. But like, it was just a mismatch with, oh, I am mighty and blah, 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 the weight of leadership on my shoulders, where instead it should be, I should not be allowed anywhere near a horse or a car to get from point A to point B without a minder. And like, they, once you lean into that, it's fine.
Well, and like all of it, like the entire world in this case, like none of it was like, it wasn't dark. It wasn't depressing. Yeah. It wasn't awful. And that's not to say that there was not at some point tragedy in it or anything like that, but you know, that wasn't the part we saw. And it was really entertaining to watch all of that happen. And partly because Chris Hemsworth is just a delight. And you know, and it was fun.
And by the way, so was Natalie Portman.
Oh yeah. No, she was great. Like it was better. Yeah. I would say this poor woman, like on screen, like the second Thor movie did her no favors whatsoever. Ugh. But here she plays Jane as somebody who's witty and high-minded, like, because she's obviously trying to call S.H.I.E.L.D. and be like, the world, like, you play her as smart and conscientious and comfortable with her own ginormous brain, and like still also a very human young woman with all that entails, and you love to see it, or you love to hear it in this case. It was great.
Yeah.
She was a lot of fun. I think this is probably the most interesting Jane that we've got yet, because we don't have Love and Thunder.
Yeah. And when we get that, we'll be assessing, but we haven't got it yet. We're not time traveling. So,
right. Until that, like, that's why I have to hold, like, reserve judgment.
But. Yeah. I'm pretty confident in the filmmakers and the writers and stuff that Love and Thunder will not disappoint. I'm not sure if it's going to be totally awesome, but just the set.
Well, it's going to be better than The Dark World. I mean,
I enjoyed The Dark World. My wife, as I've mentioned before, my wife loved The Dark World, go figure. I thought the last Thor movie was totally awesome. I really enjoyed it.
It was amazing.
Because you had somebody who figured out what to do with movie star Chris Hemsworth. Like, well, no, we've gone into, like, we've talked about, like, the difference between actors and movie stars, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Chris Hemsworth, I would not pay to see him act, but I would pay to see him movie star. And like Thor Ragnarok leans into it. It's great that way. So, yes.
you wouldn't pay to see him act. I actually have seen him in other things that are not Thor, and he is quite stunningly good.
I saw that one where it's I'm the dude who inspired Moby Dick, whatever that movie was.
That movie is shite.
And so,
not his fault. That's
no, like the, no. The movie where you're like, I root for the whale. And then I also saw the movie where he's up against Baron Zemo and they're both Formula One race car drivers.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people really like that and his performance in it, but I can see if you didn't.
The problem, I wouldn't say it's a problem, but like the thing is Daniel Brühl is so much better.
Fair. That's
where like you watch the two of them and you see what Brühl's doing and you see the level Hemsworth is at and you're like, okay, we've got it. Well, it's like when you know how like sometimes when you watch the Olympics and it's like some poor basketball team that has to go up against like Team USA and you're like, oh, God bless them for getting on the court.
I have a certain amount of respect that you showed up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're like, oh, truly, you have a noble athletic heart. And I love that you're playing to the top of your game. It's not your fault that your game is just not up where theirs is. Right.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt watching My Face Melted in the Car or whatever that movie was called. Where Daniel Brühl is just at it, like he's playing on a different level. So, but again, I will pay to watch Chris Hemsworth be a comedic movie star, like Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters is delightful in all the ways.
And the Russo brothers figured out how to use him too. Like he got his due in the Avengers movies when the Russo brothers took over. So
yeah,
same thing. Anyway,
I like that. I like the second film, not only because of the comedy he got to do, but the fact that it was also so sorrowful.
Yes.
And he knew how to play that.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing going over the top, but it's the other thing is running to the edge and not going over. And it's a very difficult thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do with comedy. I can't remember what it was. It might have been.
Not everyone can do it either. I mean,
yeah.
Right. The thing is to do comedy right is you don't do comedy.
Right.
You take what you're doing seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Play everything as if the character really believes it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blinking on the actor's name, passed away just a few years ago, one of my favorite actors, young Frankenstein.
Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder, who talked about comedy And he's not the only person who says this, but, you know, if you do not take what you're doing seriously,
why would the audience?
Yeah. Why would the audience say the way
no
you,
one else is going to? Yeah.
The way you sell the funny is that it's not necessarily funny to you when you do that. It's not like, it's not mugging, right?
Yeah.
Well, so, mugging is so off-putting.
Yeah.
I mean, this would have been a very real risk in any of the What If episodes, because there might have been a real temptation for these actors to stroll into a movie studio, into the recording booth, and be like, oh, okay, this is for a cartoon. Let's see what I can do.
Oh, it's cartoons, and we're going to just, yeah.
But I have to say, I've been really pleasantly surprised by the care that voice actors have been putting into this, because it really is being asked to do your job in completely different circumstances than what they're used to. And that's something
in a bunch of ways too. Like, some of this was likely recorded remotely, you know, if they had looping or things to do, like, you know, we need you to go stand in the closet with this microphone and, you know, next to all your clothes, so there's no echo, and you need to say these things and act like you really mean them when you're saying them to a bunch of hung up pairs of pants, you know.
And the other challenge is if you're somebody who, if part of the pleasure of your job is interacting with other people and doing this creative collaboration together, and it boosts the quality of your work, and then all of a sudden you're getting your sides and you're like, I have three lines. I don't know what any of these mean. I'm saying them this way, and this way. Okay, fine, whatever. It's hard to put 100% into that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about this episode was, I don't think there was an off vocal performance.
No.
It was a little bit weird to have Frigga's take be completely different from Rene Russo. But you know what? This is also a completely different universe. So
I believed it in the context we got from the other characters and stuff. So,
I mean, she's she's your basic wine mom. Like, she has like live, laugh, love somewhere in that castle. and I like that they just kind of leaned into that with her too.
I'm going to go see my sister for the solstice. It's fine. Yeah. It was great.
I don't know about you. I wonder, I have a feeling that the reason they gave us such an unrepentantly, joyfully silly 1980s risky business romp was because like the next 2 weeks are probably going to be pretty brutal or pretty brain bendy with, oh, and now we have eight timelines coming together and a watch is losing his mind and we find out who he's been talking to. And
I was hoping the opposite, that this was the palate cleanser after what they'd forced us to sit through in the last 2 weeks.
No, I feel like this is them going, okay, we know you've pushed you for a bit. Let's take a rest and enjoy this because it's about to become.
Because we know what's coming.
Again.
So
yeah, exactly.
Well, all I can say, Lisa, is I hope so, because I want, I've had my dessert now.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to actually have the main course. Mm. Obviously, we're all Europeans here.
they do the salads after dinner there.
So let's get the meat and potatoes here. And that's the thing that's really bugged me about this series. Mm. You know,
is that it's not for anything yet.
Exactly.
Okay. Because that's kind of where I was headed with it, was like, I can see where you're going with this, because it so far it hasn't been for anything. Like, why are we watching all of these? It's not just because it's fun. Like, I mean, that's why we're doing it, because it's fun for us to sit here and do this part of it,
but our lives are small and we'll watch anything these people do. But for the greater good.
I'm laughing because it's true.
But it's like, we are, because that's the case, we also have been trained to know that this all builds towards something. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we don't really know what that is. And I just want to take a second, speaking of not knowing what it is and possibly building to something, and point out that we got a reply from Darth Null on Twitter, who said, thanks so much for the shout out. For the record, there was no chemical enhancement needed to come up with my theory. I'm in information security. Imagining crazy ways to do evil is part of the job description.
It really is. I love.
Oh, that's creepy.
But I love IT pros, though. IT, like, information security professionals are among my favorite IT pros to talk to, precisely because they look at the world in such unusual, like, they're all about the lateral thinking, and it's like pinball lateral thinking. And just the way that they look at the world and identify different threats and how to mitigate them is just, it's such a pleasure. Anytime I have to interview one, I'm like, oh, yes.
It's so exciting. It's it's a lot of fun.
It really
now
is.
I want to get into InfoSec because I want imagining crazy ways to do evil to be on my business cards.
So the good news is the good news is there's a shortage of good InfoSec professionals. And the even better news is there's a huge push in the field for a diversity of backgrounds because I'm serious. Since social engineering is such a huge part of it's such an effective attack vector.
Yes.
Really good InfoSec professionals are always like, okay, I can't imagine every possible situation. So I have to be around people who have as many varied experiences as possible. So we understand where they're coming from and why they're doing it.
Yeah.
And I promise you this is not like a paid placement from, you know, RSA or anything like that. I'm just saying that in my career as a tech reporter and a tech editor, the security people are always the ones who crack open the world and force you to look at it in new and exciting ways. And it's a great time to get into the industry because ransomware is just one of the biggest economic and
super hot right now.
It's one of the biggest economic and diplomatic threats we have, which is like, how do we get from partying to talking about this? What the hell?
It's because I looked at Twitter. That's what happened. Kelly, that's on me. I know.
Yeah.
Since we're on Twitter, I'll give you a palate.
Yeah,
it did. But I'll give you a palate cleanser for it because Swamp Kitten Gary.
Oh.
Hi, Gary. Gary has a joke for us.
Oh,
so here you go, Swamp Kittens. How do fans of MCU TV cool off in the summer? It's not air conditioning. It's a swamp cooler.
Ah! That's terrible. I love it.
It's so bad. It comes all the way around. I love it. Thank you, Gary.
So awful. It's awesome.
It is. Yes. That's an Ant-Man level joke right there.
Oh God. Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Swamp Kitten Gary.
Oh,
we're glad to have you.
So something I just realized, cause I was scanning through the credits as we're
recruiting InfoSec professionals.
We're recruiting InfoSec professionals, is that the series creator AC Bradley was the one who's credited with writing the first episode about Captain Carter. And he's also solely credited for the Doctor Strange episode. And he's solely credited for this episode.
Okay, the Doctor Strange episode was actually darkly funny too. So
It did have its moments. Yeah.
So I just thought it was interesting that these were the ones.
The same person's responsible for all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's the series creator, and it generally goes between him and Matthew Chauncey, who's the other writer. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But I thought it was odd that these were the ones he put his imprimatur on.
So. Yeah. I don't know if we're done reacting.
I think we are. Shall we move into the really?
Well, because that was what I wanted to know, was because I did have a question for Dawn. And so I wanted to see.
Well, there we go. Could... Let's move into the segment. Really? With Lisa and Kelly. Mm-hmm.
So Dawn, at the beginning of the episode, when we get the setup from Uatu, we get some sort of like Norman Rockwell painting moments, you know, of the two of them. Standing there and such, and then
Thor and Loki. When you say the two of them, right?
Yeah. Yes, Thor and Loki. I skipped ahead in my head. So, Thor and Loki, like standing there, you know, with the little circles behind them. Like, I feel like my TV just cut off the part where it said Saturday Evening Post over their heads, and they were standing there. And then we get the moment of, it looks like Loki is like pointing the Tesseract, like the big thing that was wrapped around the Tesseract, like at Thor, and something's happening. And, you know, and they're like, you know, without Loki keeping things lively. And I wondered if that stuff was nods to things in the comics that I just wasn't remembering.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, Kelly asked me this via text, like about an hour before we record. And I have to say, I got nothing. I thought hard about this, and I reviewed it multiple times. And as near as I can tell, that's probably less about the comics and more about the MCU and Thor's story from Ragnarok, possibly about Loki not changing him, but changing himself and being the snake and, you know, stabbing him. I don't know. Okay. Because it didn't seem to be a comics call out to me. Now, if somebody else out there in crazy land who actually listens all the way through the episodes for really can inform me, I'd be glad to know, but I got nothing on that one. Okay. I don't know if it's a Tesseract like thing that he's holding, or it's an Etch-a-Sketch. I stared at that thing for the longest time, and I was like, what the sheol is that?
I looked at it and went, is this the time that, like, was this the thing that got Thor turned into a frog, or some other sort of, like, wink to people that spent a lot more time reading Thor comics than I did? People like my brother, who spent all their time reading the Thor comics. I did not. I did enjoy them, but they were not my jam. So
also in the hour's time I had to prepare, I didn't have an opportunity to call my sister and have an extensive discussion, because she actually had not seen the episode yet.
No, so, no, well, don't sister
to do that so that she can be our in-house.
How do we fan club meetings if she's fallen down on the job?
Well, just tell her to realign her schedule to our convenience. That's all we have. Exactly.
Honestly, get some priorities, Dawn sister.
Oh my god.
So
we're very disappointed, Dawn sister.
Well, we're not mad. We're just disappointed.
Just disappointed. She's usually my backstop for things like this, but. I will say that Thor was not as much of as her fave when we were younger and dubiously better looking. Thor was like one of my favorite characters. I mean, I was the one, you know, swinging my croquet mallet like Mjolnir out in my backyard with a towel tied around my neck. So I'm not sure if she's actually read everything Thor. So, but I will talk to her, and I will come back from a report with a report in next week's episode after I force her to watch this.
Okay.
All right. Much appreciated.
And thanks in advance, Dawn sister, for any information you can provide.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was my big question, because I thought maybe some of that stuff was like a wink to something else. I will point out, I was slightly disappointed on Lisa's behalf that if we're going to do all this multiverse work and we're going to get Loki and we don't get any Loki Gator, I mean, that's just mismanagement on someone's part.
Well, he's been chucked into the void, remember?
That's true.
So he's already been pruned. My poor boy is forced to subside on terrible wine in a bowling alley somewhere.
And Ecto Cooler from the 90s, from our timeline in the 90s.
He hasn't been brought into this timeline yet. So.
Poor guy.
I know. Yes.
I was sad on your behalf when that happened, and I went, oh, that's
no, this funny. Episode was honestly just so funny in so many ways. And the fact that they keep putting Thor in Disney princess-like shots. he really is the most pretty princess, and he might be a Disney princess in this.
He's now my second favorite Disney princess.
Yes,
and he would be my favorite Disney princess
if Loki didn't exist.
Princess, that's good. But Princess Leia is a Disney princess, and so my allegiance is clear.
Yeah. This calls back to episode 3, the what if the world lost its mightiest heroes. And although Hemsworth did not voice Thor, I mean, Thor never said anything before he's like...
before he's
he wasn't actually, kidding. He is gorgeous.
Yeah, yes, everyone was like, wow. Yeah. And he smelled great as he was deteriorating.
He smelled great even when he's rotting. He smells like lavender.
Yes. Well, Clark Gregg had great lines in that episode, and he had great lines in this one too. So.
Yes.
So there's
He's always delightful. I want to, what if Agent Coulson was the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Like, let's watch that episode.
Oh, yeah. You know, the guy is like almost 60 years old now.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. He's been kicking around as an actor for a long time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But now, yeah. Now that I've said that, I'm kind of caught up in that in my head now. I just want to go watch that episode. What if Agent Coulson was director Coulson? Like, you know, that would be great.
So here's a suggestion I'm going to make to all of us, since we've been wringing our hands behind the scenes. Whither shall we fly once the series is done? I think we devote an episode to pitching the what ifs we would have liked to see. All right.
Oh, that is a marvelous idea.
I see what you did there.
Let's make that our special treat.
All right.
And meanwhile, in a special treat for listeners, we're going to actually wrap up this podcast.
Yes. I want to point out that part of that pitch draft is going to include a listener section. So if you have a what if that you would like to see, send it to us.
Start thinking. Yep.
And since you called the wrap, then this is where I jump in and go, if you have feedback for the show and if you would like to get squeeing from Lisa and I on the level of Swamp Kitten Gary, who gets it every week because he's so far is like crushing the Swamp Kitten game.
We love all of you Swamp Kittens, but we love Swamp Kitten Gary especially.
We have a very special place for Swamp Kitten Gary because
not in hell, Gary.
No.
very special place.
Yes, we have a special place in the house for Gary because. The letter Kenny honked off was just beautiful. Which reminds me, Don, what is your honked off level at this episode? It's a thing we have to check.
It's still making a sound, but it is not as loud and goose-like the last
minimally honked off. Can we
this
say
this is going to be like the one? This is going to be like the one show on The Incomparable where we just have a menagerie to express emotions. At this point, we have the Swamp Kittens for all things that are delightsome. We have the honked off goose for all things that are irritating to our eyes. I mean,
we're going to turn into that Star Trek episode Tanagra's Arms Wide. That's going to just be us talking about like
when
the
walls fell. That's what I'm when afraid the walls of fell. With this. Yeah. With the series. So.
Yeah, no, this is, I just worry that, well, actually, you know what? There are three of us on this podcast. We just need one more animal and I think we'll be okay. Anyway, Don, I'm so sorry. Your honked off levels. Let's go back to the honk.
We got Lisa's disappointment in the lack of Loki Gator of Swamp Kitten content. So I need to get a honked off level.
I think it has steadily been going up. Might have actually hit its peak in episode 5 with
brains.
But I think it's down lower than that. I can't assign a number directly to it. I'm sorry.
I was just hoping that honked off levels were dropping. That was really what I was hoping.
This one dropped. They were remaining steady for the last two episodes. I was pretty honked off for those two. This dropped slightly, but it's not like the goose is quiet. He's eaten some bread. You know, he's distracted by another goose. I don't know.
Distracted by the carbs, the delicious comedy carbs of this last episode.
Exactly.
Comedy carbs. Oh my gosh, I love carbs. It.
All right. And I will say he was distracted by that twist ending. Mm-hmm. Like I said, totally did not see that one coming. And I was intrigued. And then I was honked off by it because it's like, what are we ever going to see anything with that? Right. So.
The honkometer, you know, we're really just a few episodes away from having like a honkometer with goose noises. This is where this is going. Yeah, exactly.
If you wish to build that so that Kelly can use it to edit the show,
it's gonna be like a soundboard, like we're all morning DJs.
Yes, and if you have one of those and would like us to use it,
is this what all shows devolve into? This is exactly what happens, right? I don't know.
In all the podcasts I've ever listened to, I've never heard anybody go, "Let's recast the Golden Girls with Marvel characters," because that would be awesome. So I couldn't really say. I also have never been good a swamp point. Kitten until this moment. So, you know, I'd like to think maybe we're a little bit original in that. You can reach us at I Want My MCU TV on Twitter. If you like to kick it old school and do things via email, you can do that at mcutv@theincomparable.com. And you can find all of us on Twitter. We're not particularly hard to track down. We're elsewhere on the network. And you can always get a hold of us. And we are happy to have your theories, your Swamp Kitten content. We're happy to have your questions for Professor Melton for the Really segment and all of it. We're here for it. So by all means.
Yes, please. Please. Mm-hmm.
Keep it up, guys. Again, we cherish all of you Swamp Kittens and we love hearing from you.
We really do.
And on that note of amity, good cheer, and good party vibes, let's wrap it up. This has been I Want My MCU TV with Kelly Gamont.
Don and I are keeping the scoot scoots.
Don Melton.
I'm sorry. My entire sign-off line just evaporated from my head with that.
It's the best
because
one.
I'm picturing Kelly and I driving off in them. Okay.
Scooters, do-do-do, and in the thankless role of Mother
Frigger.
And in the thankless role of Mother Frigger for this episode, I have been Lisa Schmeisser. Goodbye, everybody.
Too bad this might spell the end of the world, but that's a story for another day.
Do we're just signing up, we're just fading out the end, we're all cracking up, right?
Oh, that's but the skits has such a great line.
It was, as soon as I heard that, my brain went, Don and I are keeping the scoots, and I'm like, there it is,
Kelly. I almost had something come out of my nose. That was so funny. So unexpected.
Oh, all right. That makes me so happy.
Yes, that is great. Just fade us out at the end there.